Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. My name is Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Peter Dale Scott. Peter Dale Scott is a professor emeritus from the English department at the University of California in Berkeley, and he has a wide range of interests. I'm looking at three books that he's written here. His most recent one is poetry called Minding the Darkness. That's just recently come out, but we're not going to be talking about poetry. We're going to be talking about Colombia and this interview and the war going on in Colombia. I want to mention two other books that Peter Dale Scott has written. One is Deep Politics and the Death of JFK, and another one is Cocaine Politics, Drugs, Armies, and the CIA in Central America. He wrote that with Jonathan Marshall. So we're going to just get right into Peter Dale Scott, the issue of what's going on in Colombia, because actually that's where we left off in the last interview that we did, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if things have escalated since that time. I know that you were warning that people should look at what was going on in Colombia. The United States has given a huge amount of money, $1.6 billion, I think, something like that, to Colombia, and you said it was a war that could easily spread all over South America. I know that it's spilling into Ecuador.
Yes. And Venezuela. It's destabilizing the whole of the northern part of South America, and it's very interesting that the heads of state of Latin American countries had a summit in November in Panama, and they agreed that they had a problem here. And the problem, essentially, that they were talking about was the problem presented by the Plan Colombia voted by the United States. So they are meeting, I believe, this month. They agreed to meet this month to discuss the dangers to peace in the area from the U.S. Plan Colombia. I should say that originally the phrase Plan Colombia was a balanced program, part civilian, part military, that was put forward by the new president of Colombia, Andrés Pastrana. And he ran as a peace candidate, as somebody who would bring an end to the war, and he said that this Plan Colombia would do it. And the idea was that the Americans would give the military aid, because that's what they always give, and it would be balanced by economic and social aid coming from Europe. But the European countries, when they saw just how much and what kind of military aid the United States was going to give, they backed off on giving economic aid. And the European countries are really very, very opposed to what we're doing here, and you don't hear a word about that in the press in this country. There's a European Parliament, and I believe they just passed a resolution against what the American version of Plan Colombia, which was purely or 90% military, and therefore a very different thing from the original Plan Colombia. And the European Parliament has just passed a resolution by a vote, I believe, of 334-1 against what the United States is doing. Mm-hmm. And you find President Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is very opposed. This is leading to a dramatic deterioration in relations between the United States and Venezuela. The Americans have accused Chavez of actually supplying arms to the FARC rebels in Colombia. FARC is the Colombian Revolutionary Armed Forces acronym, FARC. There was, you know, the CIA had a very secure client in Peru by the name of Vladimiro Montesino, who was the man behind Fujimori. And then the Americans discovered that Montesinos was selling arms to the FARC. So that America, by insisting on heightening the military aspects of the campaign in Colombia, is not only confronting the FARC and the other revolutionary movement, the ELN, it's increasingly confronting is the word here, Venezuela. And there's now been a change of government in Peru, but that doesn't mean the problem will go away. And meanwhile, on the sidelines, the governments of Bolivia and Brazil and Panama have all expressed their concern about this militarization. I think there are a number of motives for the Americans doing what they're doing. First of all, they obviously oppose every revolutionary movement in the world, and particularly those in this hemisphere. But also, it's a cover under which America is now building a huge new base at Manta in Ecuador to replace the bases that it has lost in Panama. The Americans, I think, were hoping that despite the treaty, which said that Americans would pull out of their bases in Panama by the year 2000, they hoped that they would use the pretext of the war on drugs to get a war on drugs base in Panama. And when Panama was not cooperating in that respect, they're building a new such base in Ecuador. This is very destabilizing because the bases in Panama were at least secure because of that tiny isthmus. There was no risk of forces coming in. But the base in Manta, Ecuador, is very different. The FARC are not far away, and it wouldn't surprise me that someday to see mortar shells being lobbed into that base or other forms of attack on the base. So the conventional military mind thinks, well, if we have a base there, then we can control the area. That was the kind of mindset that led to such massive folly in Vietnam. They built these huge bases in Vietnam, and the people were taking casualties inside the bases because the NLF forces were not very far away. And there are many, many ways in which what we're seeing in Colombia shows that the military mind has not really evolved very far from what they were doing in Vietnam. I'm sure that they have no intention of introducing U.S. ground forces in Colombia, but that isn't a difference from Vietnam. That's a recurrence of Vietnam, because when I first came to this country in 1961, I knew a little bit about Indochina from my experience at the United Nations. And it was just scary to me to hear the Americans sending all this kind of assistance, saying, of course, we will never send U.S. ground forces, because it was clear that the assistance wouldn't work. And then at a certain point, you either have to say, oh, well, we made a mistake and pull out. But once the Pentagon has committed itself, it never has the kind of self-control to say we've made a mistake and pull out. They just throw more and more resources after what they've already spent, and so that led to a huge ground war in Vietnam. It's equally obvious, I think, and in fact there's a consensus in Washington among the people who've studied the problem the closest, that the new military plan Colombia is not going to solve anything. It's being disguised as a war on drugs. It won't even solve that problem. It is certainly going to add to the social agony in Colombia. The militarization has been a nightmare on all sides. I mean, you now have families in the second, third generation of violence, and it's what was originally a fairly clean and genuine revolutionary movement has suffered so much violence that it has become quite engaged in counter-violence itself. And the people who are suffering from all sides now are the human rights workers and the peace workers in Colombia, because it has become a culture of violence.
Mm-hmm. I'd like you to say, Peter Dale Scott, something just a little bit for people that don't necessarily that have a reaction to when you say a revolutionary movement, because if you could just say a little bit more about what you mean by that. I mean, I understand what you mean, but we have a broad range of listeners, and that may bring up things for certain people that are different than what you want them to think.
Well, there's a very moving book about Colombia by a woman called Anna Carrigan, and she describes how one of the revolutionary movements in Colombia arose. Originally, it was a movement very much like SNCC. It was nonviolent. It was
SNCC is the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Talking about, you know, when back in the 60s, when people went into the south of the United States to get people the vote and so on. This was another student-led movement that they saw that the workers in foreign-owned plants, most of them U.S.-owned plants, were being exploited, and they went in to help the workers organize, and the corporations had access to private forces who would just go out and kill these students. So after a while, the students leagued together to form a self-defense group, which became more and more a militarized revolutionary movement. The FARC itself, you know, if they're the whole U.S. presence in Colombia goes back to 1962. It was John F. Kennedy's response to the perceived threat of Fidel Castro. They said, oh, here's a revolutionary government in Cuba, talking about revolution for the hemisphere. We have to go in and stop this from happening in Colombia. So what happened first was that the U.S. Special Forces under General Yarborough went in with a mission to see what could be done in Colombia, and they set up a whole counterinsurgency program in Colombia. And it was this counterinsurgency program that produced the FARC, because you had a lot of people who were organizing banana workers on plantations and so on. And suddenly you had organized counter-terror coming down on them. And so 2 years after the Americans came, a group of these people organized themselves into these armed forces to resist what was coming down from the Colombian army as it had been reorganized by the Americans. So the feared intervention by Castro never happened. What you have is a totally autonomous, it's always been local, it's never been controlled by the Soviet Union or by China or by Castro. It was in response to what we are doing. And the more we money we and troops and advisors and helicopters and so on we have poured into the country, the bigger this conflict has become. It's one which has been very much exacerbated by what we are doing. And this is the big difference between Pastrana's Plan Colombia, which was to end this kind of agony, and what we're offering in place of it, which is 90% military and is going to make the agony even worse.
Mm-hmm. So it starts out with people fighting for their rights, basically, just yes. Poor people, poor working people fighting, you know, wanting to get more rights, higher wages, better right. conditions, and then it keeps being fed, plantation workers, and then the fire, it's just fed and fed and becomes a big fire by right. this military money.
And now these revolutionaries have become more and more like a conventional army. They're much bigger. Pastrana gave them an area that to administer, which the Colombian army for the time being is staying out of. This is an area the size of Switzerland. I mean, it's a big area. Mm-hmm. So, but I have to say, you know, I have a lot of sympathy for the way in which these revolutionary movements began. I have less sympathy for them now because I feel they have been so inured to the violence of the country that they've become more and more like the forces which they are opposing. And particularly, there have been some very ugly scenes between the FARC and the ELN.
What's the ELN?
It's the National Liberation Army. It's a different group. Mm-hmm. And there was a third group which decided to stop waging a military campaign and to enter the political process, which is the general formula of all the various peace programs that have been offered since 1980. And the response of the FARC to this group was to start killing them off. And so, ironically, many of these former revolutionaries in the third movement are now part of the paramilitaries, who are the worst problem of all. These are organized death squads on a very large scale who deal with a revolutionary problem by just terrorizing a village. They'll go in and publicly execute the males of the village and often their families. They use chainsaws to kill people. If there's any single threat to the peace in Colombia, it is these paramilitaries, and they're essentially on the U.S. side because the U.S. is working with the Colombian army, and it's not a publicly admitted fact, but it's definitely a fact that the army for more than 20 years has been collaborating with these death squads, even though they were originally financed by the big drug cartels. So we are contributing aid in the name of fighting drugs. We are contributing aid to a working coalition between an army and paramilitaries who in the past have been financed by the drug cartels. Army officers of a very senior level have met in meetings with the senior heads of the Cali and Medellin cartels to figure out how to fight the revolutionaries in their area. So there's something very hollow about the idea that we are fighting wars. We are going to fight drugs in one area of Colombia, the area which is controlled by the FARC. Now, the paramilitaries, the head of the paramilitaries, a man called Carlos Castaño, he has boasted on television that they get 70% of their revenues from cocaine. Now, the FARC is also getting money from cocaine, but they just tax it. They tax everything that goes on. And one of the things that is going on in a big way is the drug trade. Ironically, that's an area which now grows coca because of the very vigorous U.S. campaign to stamp out coca in Bolivia and Peru. The result was it moved into this inaccessible part of Colombia. But the paramilitaries, the ACCUs, the biggest paramilitary group, and Castaño, they admit that they're in the drug trade. They don't just tax it. They are doing it. There was a single seizure of drugs not long ago of $53 million that was... It was an ACCU shipment. And the DEA, in its reports, has said that the Cali cartel is mostly broken up now. And the DEA said the largest...
I just want to say the DEA is a drug enforcement agency.
Administration, yes. And they're the, they're the civilian agency which is fighting the war on drugs. And they have said the largest cartel to emerge in the breakup of the Cali cartel is the Henao Montoya cartel. And I'm quoting from a DEA report here, is closely allied with Carlos Castaño and the paramilitaries. So, but we're not going after him. And in fact, I can't prove it, but I suspect that there has certainly been outside support for the paramilitaries from British special forces and Israeli special forces organized as private groups. And these are the same Israeli private groups that were working with the United States, with the Contras, in Guatemala and El Salvador. So I suspect very much that their presence there would mean that the United States at least tolerated, if not actively approved, what they were doing. Because essentially, all through the 1980s, when you had a Congress concerned about human rights violations in Central and South America, America would stop doing something, and then the Israelis would take up and do it instead, including selling arms to the Contras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a lot of this story sounds very familiar to me, who's been following things fairly closely for the last 30 years or more, and I'm not sure that it does to probably to some Americans and not to others, and not only Americans, but listeners here, because some people are younger. I mean, this dynamic of the United States military, which is our tax money, I can't impress that enough on people, because this may or may not be what people want their tax money to be used for, and of course, if it's presented at all in the corporate media, it's usually not presented in a way that we're going to go squish this people's movement and kill lots of people. I mean, that's not the way it's presented. So I hope that people get some education about the kind of the very common kind of dynamics that goes on with U.S. So-called aid.
You know, when you actually read the State Department's description of Plan Colombia, it talks about supporting the peace process, it talks about human rights and so on, and it might even be sincere on the part of the State Department, but the fact is they talk about supporting the peace process. There are $0 for that, but although money could be useful in supporting the peace process. And the real problem was put very well by a former U.S. ambassador to Colombia called Robert White, a man I know personally. And this is what he had to say about what's going on now. He said, "Tell me where you put your money, and I'll tell you what your foreign policy is. If you put over 90% of your foreign policy dollar into the Pentagon and the CIA, then your policy is going to emphasize a military approach, a secretive, under-the-table approach to the problems. For example, the budget for the White House Drug Office is greater than the State Department and the Commerce Department put together." I think that is the heart of the problem. We have a State Department, but it's tiny in its resources and its personnel compared to the Pentagon. And so no matter what your policy starts off by being, it ends up being totally controlled by the military, and that's, of course, what happened in Vietnam. We didn't originally go in to fight a war. It's just that the military took over from everything else.
Right. Well, and, of course, I think over half of the whole budget of the United States is spent on the military, and it also reminds me of the fact that, at least in California here, we spend more money on prisons than schools. So that's like a really an excellent point to make, is where does the money go?
And that's why we're fighting a war on drugs, because it suits the various lobbies, the prison lobby. That's big business now, and that's one of the biggest lobbying funds in state politics going into Sacramento is from the prison wardens and so on. So the bureaucracy takes over, and we forget what the policy originally was trying to do, and it becomes a vast self-sustaining boondoggle, which goes on and on. And that's why I'm so depressed about this and so pessimistic. Now, the original proponents of Plan Colombia said it's going to work. It's going to be a success, like El Salvador was a success. Never mind the fact that what happened was that we were training death squads in El Salvador. Even the people who originally proposed this Plan Colombia, the two of the most active proponents were a veteran of the Contra efforts by the name of Andrew Messing and Congressman Benjamin Gilman. And they have both turned against the present Plan Colombia because they said you have to have an economic component. Well, the economic component is laughable. It's 5%, 10%, something like that. This is essentially a military program thrown at a massive social problem, which is not being solved by a military approach, is being aggravated by a military approach.
Well, now we only have 3 minutes left, not barely that, Peter Dale Scott. And it's not clear to me what is the reason that the United States is, the military is so active in Colombia. So if you could say something just really quick, and we want to have time for your web page, so then people get your pencils ready.
After Vietnam, the Pentagon was very worried about what they called the Vietnam Syndrome. They wanted to be able to fight wars again. They wanted to prove they could win a war. How did they prove it? They invaded Grenada. Well, Grenada was a small enough island so that the Pentagon won. And then it was Panama, which was a grotesque operation. They want to show that they can be useful on a higher level than Panama. So I think Colombia is there. And, you know, what this is going to do is alienate the United States more and more from other countries in that region and also, I believe, from Europe. There are other reasons why America and Europe are drifting apart now that they don't have a common fear of the Soviet Union. But I think tactics in the Third World is going to become a bigger, bigger issue where the United States and Europe agree. And a lot of American citizens, I think, will be sympathetic to the Europeans' opposition to this kind of program.
Well, I hope so, because it doesn't make me feel good to know that that people are being killed and that my tax money is supporting that, I'll tell you that. Peter Dale Scott, thank you very much, and we want to be sure to let people know how to get hold of you and get more information if they want.
Well, I do have a website, and it has a mail address there. The website is http://Socrates, S-O-C-R-A-T-E-S, .Berkeley, B-E-R-K-E-L-E-Y, .edu, / and then a little tilde, like goes over so many N's in Spanish. And after the tilde, P.D. Scott, all in lowercase. And there you will find that it tells you my email address, pdscottweb@hotmail.com.
Okay, I'm going to give that web page again. It's the usual http://Socrates.Berkeley, /PD Scott, all in small letters, right?
That's right.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much, Peter Dale Scott, and my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.